As promised, we're joined by a football writer for Sports Illustrated. Consider him a very good friend of the program, and also the author of a powerful and disturbing piece on Kellen Winslow Jr., which we will get into. Robert Klemko is my guest. Robert, great to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good. So you've got this long-form piece on SI.com that I've wanted to talk to you about for quite some time, because while you did an amazing job with it, it's also extremely disturbing. The title of the piece, Robert, is You Never Knew Kellen Winslow Jr. So let's go back. Before you started to work on that piece, what was your impression of Kellen Winslow Jr.?
You know, I was a young NFL fan. I was in high school when he got drafted, you know, in the first round by the Browns. And I always thought he was one of the great, you know, would have been, could have been talents in the history of the NFL. And then I started covering the league, and you start to hear these stories about kind of the way he behaved behind the scenes, some of the things that were sexual in nature, exhibitionism, if you will. And you just wondered if any of that stuff would ever get out. And there was really no reason to flesh it out and report on all of it because, you know, what was the hook? What was the big news item that it was tied to, right? And then he's arrested for rape. And then you remember, okay, who was it that told me that story? And then you start to go back and try to piece some of these things together and see if there's a pattern of behavior there.
Robert Klemko joining us. So all of that said, what was it like reporting on this?
You know, there were two facets of it. There was, you know, being at home and calling experts, calling psychiatrists and people who study rape and CTE and specifically rape of the indigent and the homeless. And that was, you know, fascinating in that, you know, I think a lot of people look at this case and say it's really bizarre that somebody of wealth who has notoriety, who comes from a famous family, would go to these lengths and, you know, do what he's accused of and rape women that are indigent, hitchhiking, homeless women and the like. But, you know, what I learned was that it's way more common than, you know, than people really think, because, you know, what rapists are looking for in a victim is not necessarily attractiveness, but vulnerability and the confidence that they won't either be able to go report to the police or they won't be believed. And then the second aspect of it was, you know, going to the actual trial. It was the first ever trial I'd been in, certainly the first violent crime or rape trial. And seeing what victims and accusers have to go through in terms of facing the person who allegedly raped them and telling their story, you know, I think, you know, we all have a feel for what that's like based on television and film, but you don't really understand how agonizing it can be for these women until you're actually there and you're sitting about 30 feet away from them. And, you know, she's facing not only the lawyer who's peppering her with questions on cross-examination, but, you know, she's 15 feet away from the person that allegedly raped her.
We're talking to Robert Klemko. Boy, there's a lot of really interesting things in that response, a lot to unpack. Now, in the piece, you do go back to his time with the Browns and the fact that the team had brought his father to town to film a piece of father and son, but the son could not be found. And then he was found in the back of his vehicle, engaging in lewd conduct with himself. What did the team think of that at the time? And over the course of his career, how unusual was that kind of behavior?
Yeah, I think it was really unusual. Talent we've seen in the NFL excuses a lot of things, right? So if the 53rd guy on the roster can't be found in between 2 days because he's pleasuring himself in the back of his Hummer, you know, he's gone. You know, we don't need that kind of behavior. We don't need that kind of distraction. We don't need that kind of liability. But Kellen Winslow, I mean, people remember who followed the Browns at that time. I mean, he was considered one of the best pass-catching tight ends in the NFL for a couple of years and was growing into a really well-rounded player before injuries sidelined him. But, you know, there were multiple instances of him, you know, being seen masturbating or openly watching pornography, whether it was sitting at his locker at night and an equipment manager discovering him, or sitting on the team plane to an away game, watching it in a seat. Nobody wants to sit next to the guy. Nobody wants to room with the guy. And Phil Savage, who was the GM at the time, pulls off this trade to the Buccaneers. And certainly I'm sure the Buccaneers had no idea what they were getting into, because a lot of that same behavior continued. And you'll remember, you know, the big blow up that ended in Cleveland had nothing to do with this behind the scenes behavior related to pornography. It was him having a shouting match with Phil Savage after a game where he'd just gotten out of the hospital for a staph infection and felt like he wasn't getting enough targets in the offense in a game against Washington. So, you know, there were a lot of things going on with this guy, but his saving grace for his entire NFL career was that he could have been one of the great tight ends in NFL history.
We're talking to Robert Klemko. He's got a long-form piece on SI.com right now about Kellen Winslow Jr. Robert, according to one former assistant, when he was in Tampa, he had a life-sized, anatomically correct woman's torso that he brought with him on road trips. Did he feel like he had a problem? Did anybody else around him think that he had a problem? Or were they just saying things like, that's Kellen being Kellen?
You know, there were people over the course of his career that tried to talk to him about what appropriate behavior was. In Cleveland, there was Romeo Crennel, especially the head coach, and certainly assistant coaches who had not only been familiar with Kellen Winslow Sr.'s career, but played alongside him and knew him personally, tried to talk to Kellen Winslow. You'd hope or think that in 2019, if somebody was exhibiting the same behaviors, that there would be a team psychiatrist available to talk to somebody like that, and that would be mandated in order for somebody to stay on a football team. But in 2004, you know, this is pre-Jovan Belcher. This is pre-CTE awareness. This is pre-Ray Rice. There's just not a lot of medical professionals outside of the training staff and, you know, your orthopedists, your team doctors and surgeons that are available to players. So the coaches are acting as essentially team therapists. And you know, obviously they weren't equipped to handle a player like Kellen Winslow.
I know, Robert, you've mentioned CTE a couple of times. People around Winslow try to use CTE as an explanation for this. What do you make of that argument?
You know, I don't know Kellen. I've never been, you know, around him, never talked to him. I've only seen him defending himself at trial or not defending himself because he chose not to take the stand. But what I learned over the course of reporting is that there was a faction in his family that wanted him to go with a CTE defense because he had changed in mood and temperament and behavior so drastically in the last couple of years. You know, the equally plausible explanation for that is, you know, he's a former NFL football player who didn't plan on life after football and he got depressed. And I think that's part of the reason why his defense attorneys chose to go the route they did in trying to discredit each individual accuser instead of the CTE defense. The other big reason that they wouldn't go with something like that is because you can't prove CTE in someone who's alive. You have to examine the brain removed from its skull. And so there's not a lot of precedent for that kind of defense. And the public mood is such that somebody accused of rape in 2019 is not going to be able to, you know, excuse it away with concussions in the NFL. I don't think that people are open to that sort of explanation. Maybe that's something that is possible down the road as we get a greater understanding of the human brain, but certainly not right now.
Robert Klemko joining us again. Robert, let me ask you this. If players talk about politics or they talk about social issues, coaches and front offices will frequently say that they don't want that kind of disruption to team chemistry. Yet here you have a guy who is watching porn in meetings, committing lewd acts throughout the facility, and that's not an issue for team chemistry? Like, how does that work?
You know, it's crazy. You know, I think teams are so afraid of the visiting media and having the CNN truck parked outside. I mean, the biggest nightmare for an NFL team that I can remember in terms of a PR perspective was not Ray Rice or Jovan Belcher or Tyreek Hill or Kareem Hunt. It was the bullying scandal in Miami when Jonathan Martin and I'm blanking on the other offensive lineman's name.
Richie Incognito.
I mean, that was an enormous media story because it crossed lines in terms of going from sports to what was being talked about at the time in the rest of the country, which was bullying. And the Miami Dolphins had CNN and NBC news reporters and trucks parked outside their facility for weeks. And I think that's the thing the teams are really afraid of, when the whole world starts paying attention to a problem in your building. But if you have a guy who's simply masturbating or watching porn at inappropriate times, you can cover that up. Nobody wants to talk about that. And as long as the media doesn't know about it, that's something that you can tolerate.
Now, I wonder what it would be like right now, Robert. For instance, Winslow has not been out of the league that long. So do you think teams would react differently to a player doing this right now? Or would everybody look the other way, literally, as long as that player is putting up numbers on the field?
I think that there would be a scale. You know, I think that there would be less tolerance for it now. I think that there would be more recourse for teams to try to get somebody like that who had a clear problem some professional help. But I think, again, if it's the 53rd guy on the roster, you just get rid of him. But if it's a star, I think you try to work with the guy and make sure that he still has a place on the team if he can get right.
Before you go, let me ask you this. The context for the piece is the fact that Winslow has been on trial for a series of, hideous crimes. And early on, there's this quote from Winslow to the media outside the courthouse. I'll read you the quote. "To the people who know me out there, who know what type of person I am, know my character, my NFL friends and family, my regular friends and family, they know who I am," end quote. So based on all your reporting about him, what do you make of that comment about his character?
Yeah, that was a bizarre one. And that's actually the last thing that he said in his own defense. And I would counter that by saying that everybody that I heard was a friend of Kellen Winslow, whether they were former NFL players, college friends, mentors, didn't want to speak for the story. They didn't want their name attached to anything remotely close to this, except for Denise White, the woman he had once contracted with to do his public relations and media relations. So, you know, obviously, I think these people were embarrassed to have once been close to Kellen Winslow, and several of them who spoke to me off the record felt that they didn't know him at all, and that many of the accusations in their eyes were credible.
And then finally, what's his father been like during this process? Has he been defiant? Have you had any time with him? How is he treating this?
Yeah, I think it's been really tough for him, kind of observing him during the trial. You know, he had various NFL friends, including Charlie Joyner and other former San Diego Chargers, coming to the trial, watching with him in the gallery. He was at every day of the trial, whereas Kellen Winslow Jr.'s wife only came for the pretrial hearings and the last day. And Kellen Winslow Sr. was extremely protective. I mean, when we got there, the court officials told us Kellen Winslow Sr. has requested that you do not approach the family, that you do not ask them for comment. They're not going to have any comment at any point during this trial. He went so far as to shepherd family members to and from the restroom to kind of shield them from reporters. He was doing everything he could do. I mean, I can't even imagine what a nightmare this must be for him and some of the other members of his family.
He is a football writer for Sports Illustrated, good friend of the program, and the author of a powerful and really disturbing piece on Kellen Winslow Jr. Robert, really appreciate you and appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, as always.
Robert Klemko, thank you, as always. Yeah, that is, again, a really powerful and extremely disturbing piece. I mean, at some point I maybe should have said that what we were discussing today is violent, and it's graphic, and it's disturbing. Winslow was found guilty of raping a 58-year-old woman, of exposing himself to a 59-year-old woman, of making lewd gestures to a 77-year-old woman, and is going to be retried on 8 charges that include kidnapping, 2 counts of rape, 1 count of rape of an unconscious person, and more.